Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you're on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone looking for legal advice has no place or business here on any of these calls. Nobody here at QRMD is in the law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, our advice to you would be, get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. Just folks saying what they might do were they similarly situated to you. People's opinions, really, is all. However educated and experienced and thoughtful as these opinions might be, at the end of the day, they are still just people's opinions. And it is always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. So I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremediesinthelaw.com. If we look up in the upper right-hand corner, see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that and have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. That is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure, better known to some as American Jurisprudence or AMJUR. The rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law of America rests. To have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic concept of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you might find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its national 85% win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's usually what it's most popularly purchased for, what it's known for. But that's not really why we have it up here. The reason it's up here is once you've gone through jurisdictionary a couple times and then you start into the common law default, you'll start to see very quickly that DAX is a real-life homework assignment to what we just learned about in jurisdictionary. A lot of the key pillars, key points there for the rules of civil procedure, you're acting out now in real life with the common law default. Now, that coupled with the fact that it does have such a high win rate, and usually, to be frank, traffic scenarios are usually the least strenuous, the least impacting of court scenarios that you can find yourself in, folks find it a little more palatable for that to be their first go around. So we do encourage you to pick both of these items up at your earliest convenience. They are very, very affordably priced, just $250 for the jurisdictionary and $150 for the common law default. All right, now backing back out of that, now we're back to the home page again. In that same upper right-hand corner, we see the login and register. And that prompts us to remind you to set yourself up with an online account at UMEs in the Law. Also very affordably priced at just $10 a month, and that can be done automatically if you choose through credit card or PayPal. And, of course, that gives you all access to all the features at UMEs in the Law. You've got the good-sized e-library there, books that can be purchased. You've got, of course, now access to all the calls. You have the phone number and the PIN for every single call. So that also gives you close to unlimited interaction with the speaker for the evening, with the information provider for that evening, whatever that call might be. And, of course, you have now access to the archives. You've got years and years of archives of all different calls. Just a vast wealth of knowledge available to you with that, as many as many other wonderful features as well. Now, if that's not an option for you just yet, we do broadcast these calls every night at Freedoms Radio. Freedoms Radio is 100% free to use. www.freedomsradio.com, and there's even a little question bar where you can type in a question or a comment. Click submit, that pops up on our end, and we read those out over here. And so you don't get the unlimited one-on-one with the info provider like you do by having the membership there. But you do have some limited interaction, and you don't ever have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right. Next subject. Most of you are probably familiar now with that map of the United States that you see on really every website that we have. That is Grassfire Communications, formerly known as Statewide Communications, also 100% free to use. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict, pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially how it works is you've got a very user-friendly setup wizard, you know, put your name in here, click next, that sort of thing. That's going to give you a list of topics to choose from. Of course, you can choose as many topics as you like, multiple topics. These topics range anything from status change to home foreclosure prevention, IRS matters, credit card issues, veterans' rights, health rights, on and on. If you can think of it, they apply to the net list. And then wrapping up, it's going to have you choose a radius. That could be citywide, countywide, statewide, some custom distance in the middle there. And when it's all said and done, put together much how a lot of folks would probably describe as social media. They're really nothing like a social media. It's very custom, it's very private, but how a lot of folks would describe social media. The idea is maybe perhaps, for example, you sit down there one night and say, well, this happened to me today. Maybe the first few people come back and say, well, I don't think they should be able to do that. I don't think that's right. I don't think that's fair. That's what's wrong with this country, and so on and so forth. Those all might be truthful statements, but I don't know how much of an education that's going to afford you. But maybe the next person comes in and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do if I was similarly situated. I'd go down to my local county courthouse. By the way, if you didn't know, every county's got a courthouse, or a courthouse or a law library, you're the taxpayer. And I'd look up these terms, and that would give me a good idea of what I'm going to be really in for. Now we're starting to get somewhere. Maybe a few more comments down the line. Somebody jumps in and says, well, I agree with that individual that made that suggestion. Also, I'd go to this particular website and purchase this educational process. Well, you see where we're going with this. The idea is to put the power of communication, the power of education, back in the hands of the common man. Once this is done so, and now you're learning how to handle your own affairs, your own matters, well, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to get folks to do here, just simply start talking again and learning how to educate oneself. That is also, as I said, free to use. And so check that out as well if you're earliest convenience. Also, you probably notice now every time you visit your remedy, you're met with that little blue box that pops up asking if you want to continue on or stay. The reason that we've done that is very simply we're trying to get folks to explore. All too often we hear, I wish I had known about this, or I wish I had heard about that. And so we put that up there to encourage folks to see what else is available to them under the AIRA umbrella. Your remedy has grown quite a bit over the last 5 years. And with all the new features and information providers, your remedy is just one of a few dozen websites that all together make up Americans Restoring America. So chances are, for the majority of you, there's probably quite a bit that you missed that you haven't seen yet. And so that's why we have that there, is to remind you, prompt you to, at your convenience, to check out and see what else is available there. As always, if you have a question on whether we might have an information provider or an educator that could discuss with you opinions, thoughts, ideas on your particular scenario, we encourage you to get a hold of us directly. You can call the 1-800 number, 1-800-625-4250. You can always email me directly. That's your remedies in the law.com. I'll be happy to get somebody there to speak with you as absolutely quickly as possible. All right, winding down here, this next portion we like to call your caveat emptor or your buyer beware. When you come aboard with an information provider, if you choose to do so, you're doing just that. You're coming aboard directly with that information provider. Now, these info providers pay for advertising at your remedy, and that would be a cost or an expense to that info provider, along with any other cost that could be associated with your educational process or whatever endeavor you might be looking into. one moment here. So now, if there was to be a question of credit or a refund, that would be a strict and private matter between you and your information provider. Even then, that's very few and far between. It's got to be extenuating circumstances. Again, you are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any educational process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, I want to remind everybody that all of our speakers, the conference calls, are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always keep it civil. Besides, if the question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it. All right, well, that is my ramble for this evening, folks. So without further ado, it's my pleasure at this time to go ahead and turn the call over to Mr. Edward, and he will introduce our speaker for this evening.
Well, thank you so very much, Martin. I appreciate that. Tonight has turned into a very special night. Yeah, I told you last night that I shared with you last night that Brother John would be here, and he would be sharing with you another episode of As the Stomach Churns. But other than that, I didn't really know where he was going to go with it. Now I learn he's going to be talking about Title 8, Section 1502 of the United States Code, the primary place that identifies Union State citizens, the authors and creators of the United States by birth, as an American national. And with him tonight will be his very special guest, G.W. Wow, two nights in a row. We couldn't be more blessed. So without further ado, it's my pleasure to turn this call over to Brother John.
Thank you for that very kind and gracious introduction. I want you to, if you can do me a favor, watch out for an Orange County 714 prefix number, it starts out 714-972, okay? If you could watch out for that that number, I would greatly appreciate that. It's along with our special guest, G.W. himself, we may be having the honor and the privilege of a guest, and she's asked to be referred to only as Jenny, okay? But Jenny, 36 years ago, corrected her parents. They corrected their status 36 years ago, and this was quite a while ago. But I learned that quite a few little while back that about 4 years ago, Jenny had a traffic ticket in Orange County, and it was for 31 miles over the speed limit. And when she gets here, I'm hoping that maybe she'll. So Michael, keep an eye out for that that person there, and I'll ask her to raise her hand every once in a while here. But also, anybody who's done anything on an 8 U.S.C. 1502 event this week, if you reached out to the State Department using the phone numbers or any of the information we gave you, could you raise your hand now, please? Just whether you're on the main website or dialed directly in or what, could you please raise your hand? And Michael, let us know if anybody is raising their hand right now.
All righty. Press star 2 on your keypad. Press star 2 if you have contacted the State Department this week, since last week. Press star 2. And then I'm going to go refresh Freedom's Radio real quick just to see. We don't have your guest here yet.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to end. I'm going to shamelessly review 8 U.S.C. 1502. It's a certificate of nationality issued by the Secretary for State for persons not a naturalized citizen of the United States for use in proceedings with a foreign state. And I'm going to, okay, and the text reads, the Secretary of State is authorized to issue at his discretion in accordance with the rules and regulations prescribed by him a certificate of nationality for a person not a naturalized citizen with the United States who presents satisfactory evidence that he is an American national and that such certificate is needed for use in a judicial or administrative proceeding in a foreign state. Such certificate shall be solely for use in the case in which it was issued and shall be transmitted to the Secretary of State through the appropriate official channels of the judicial and administrative officers of the foreign state in which it's to be used. Now, the groundwork for this being able to utilize this certificate is what GW has worked with many of you. And it looks like there's, I guess there's two or three of you on this call tonight that have already got you. Would everybody that has had their the information in the computer corrected to match their actual status with GW's help, or anybody else, could you please press star 2 on your keypad right now, just so we can count those numbers up? Could you please right now press star 2. Michael, how many you have come raising their hand?
None so far.
Okay, I was expecting at least. Okay, I was expecting at least one person that he said that if he could get away early enough, he was going to try to get on. But have we got a 714-972? Prefix number on the call yet?
We have no first-time callers.
Okay, not at the moment. Okay, thank you. Shout at me if we get
copy that.
If that, thank you. Okay, Jenny apparently had a speeding ticket that was that she was not just charged with speeding, but she was charged with felony reckless endangerment, and she was charged with three counts of felony reckless endangerment. Jenny got her status corrected when she was 14, when her parents both got theirs and her two brothers did. Well, Jenny had three children in the car, an 18-year-old, a 16-year-old, and, of all things, a 14-year-old. They charged her, they arrested her for felony child reckless endangerment and speeding. So, and that was not misdemeanor speed, that was also felony speed. They, the prosecutor got felony grand jury indictments against Jenny. I had no knowledge of this at the time it was occurring. Her mother, who was back then when Jenny was when she got her status corrected, the whole family got their status corrected at the same time. Her mother was in her mid-40s at the time, and this is quite a few years ago. Mom is now in her late 70s, but we had a chance to catch up over something else, and amidst everything that transpired. She says, "Oh, it's kind of funny, you know, that our status. We did some research, and we're calling her Jenny. Jenny had a fantastic event that occurred with her status correction about 4.5 years ago." And I says, "Really?" And she went on to tell me, "I was just advised that." Bill from Florida raised his hand. Was that Bill from Florida that did he reach out to the State Department or that he's got his status corrected? Would you unmute
Bill? Go ahead, Bill. You're unmuted.
No, well, I had gotten my status corrected, but I am trying to figure out how to go about getting confirmation from the U.S. State Department that my status has, in fact, been corrected. The reason I'm trying to do that is because I just want to make sure that they actually went through with the process. I have been to the Sheriff's Department and given them my my passport card and asked them to run it. And they've run it, and they haven't been able to come back with anything.
Okay. Really?
I'm trying to figure out how, in fact, one verifies that the State Department has, in fact, corrected your status.
That's okay. Thank you, Bill. Then we're going to go back to the show because right now this 8 U.S.C. 1502 is a de facto way to do that. So thank you, Bill. Okay. Getting back to Jenny's situation, Jenny, they refused, the judge refused bail. And so they were grasped, they got to the place where Jenny had been in jail for 3.5 weeks, and the state of California was nowhere near ready to prosecute her. And years ago, I had explained that the right to a fair and speedy trial, that if they've got the evidence to make the arrest, they've got the evidence to prosecute. If they don't have the evidence to prosecute, they didn't have the evidence to make the arrest. And so what happened was is that they demanded immediate release, and they had lost track of me many, many years ago, and it was a miracle. Apparently, there was some kind of event in Southern California where somebody that knew me had my phone number that used to know them as well, passed on my phone number, and they called just to say hi. And amidst things, we got on this topic, and they said amidst that, they remembered that Jenny had corrected her status, and they researched and they found 8 U.S.C. 1502, and they went to the State Department in Southern California, the State Department office there, and they went to to the office there in Southern California, and they what happened was is that amidst everything that transpired, they got to speak with a deputy director of the State Department, and it's and so they this person they reapplied and they got the they got a fast track, and they said, well, here's how you, well, here, give me all of your information. He says, here's how you apply. And amidst everything, what happened was that, you know, they went over to the 10940 Wilshire office there, and they got fast-tracked. And within 72 hours, they had that letter. You know, well, they didn't have it, but it got sent to the prosecutor and the judge in Orange County. Jenny was released the next day on her own recognizance. Okay. I asked Mom, who is at remains anonymous. I asked her, well, can I have a copy of the letter? She says, oh, no. They refused to send us a copy of the letter. They said the rules are very explicit. Send it to the judge of the jurisdiction where it needs to be. And she said that she used the part of the Enablement Act for the entrance of Alaska into the Union that coincidentally may be the same exact one that Brother Michael shared with us four calls ago, and to prove that Jenny was a with and their records and a foreign state citizen, and they still had two of the original notarized and apostilled documents that were apostilled by then governor, not lieutenant governor, but then governor Jerry Brown, and when they got their status corrected. And so what happened was that they had those apostille letters and her status correction, and whatever was in the computer was sufficient for them to issue that letter to the jurisdiction. Now, one other person in not too recent past had done the same thing, but they and we had mentioned to them about did they get a letter, and they said no, they hadn't. But that the letter did get delivered to then Vice President of Panama, and because they were apparently traveling to Panama on a family outing to visit their son who was stationed there, and the daughter got in trouble, and she had her status corrected, but the State Department, that letter was there in 24 hours, I'm told, that to Panama, and the country of Panama, Republic of Panama, released her, dropped all the charges. She was charged with felony driving while the equivalent of felony driving while intoxicated, and she did a little bit of property damage, or a lot of property damage. She apparently did $750,000 worth of property damage. They dropped everything, and she was allowed to leave on the next available flight, shall we say. They preferred that I was allowed to leave on the next available flight. Was that a good thing or a bad thing? Well, they requested that they didn't want her to stay in the country any longer. But later on they were told they feared for her safety, because the moment that the people that she property damaged found out, they said her life wouldn't be worth a plug nickel then. These people would kill her, because she had been drinking, and this girl, she's 51 years old when that happened. GW, you want to make a comment on that one?
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, very, very, very interesting story. And it has to do with not only correcting your status, but actually having the procedures, whoever's close to that person, you know, the procedures to know how to execute, pull the trigger on that so that those documents get released in whatever period of time, the one that comes from the Secretary of State. So that's a very intriguing part of this part of the story. That's why I wanted to come on tonight, John, is because, you know, hearing about what you're working with there, and I've never taken the time ever to do any kind of super research into that, or even get stories. I've just been busy helping people that, you know, get the status corrected and dealing with that whole process. So this is going to be very interesting to watch unfold.
Well, you and I have You and I have been through a teeny bit of blood and sweat in the same mud, haven't we?
Mm-hmm.
It, yeah. That's as tactfully as I can put that. It, and, GW and I, we have some commonalities that, transcend, a lot of boundaries. And, the biggest one is that we both work for a Jewish carpenter's son. It, that's our employer. But, and as well as each of you. Going back to Jenny, apparently, she later, attempted to, there was something wrong with the, license plate on the vehicle, which, it was not just out of date. It appears it may have been the plate off another vehicle, but that plate was impounded and seized off the vehicle that she was driving because it belonged to another. It was registered to another vehicle, and not just registered to another vehicle, but long since expired, like 20 years earlier. And California has a law where if you don't renew something in within 5 years of its expiration, that the license number is now forfeit. And I received one of those nice letters about the license plate on my old 70 CUDA that I had since 1977, and and I had the same plate number. You know, it was kind of nice to have the same plate number for, you know, 45, 50 years, you know, and, but they canceled it. Well, apparently, there was a tiff with the California DMV, and, in the midst of that, you know, and what happened with the original plate, it turns out the other plate was off of a vehicle that Jenny had previously owned, that was now scrapped. But what happened was that the issue floated to the surface in the courtroom. And the judge just hinted. She says, would you guys like to approach the bench? And this is Mom telling this story. Dad's filling in once in a while. But apparently the both prosecutors and the person from the California Department of Motor Vehicles approached the bench with Jenny's father and Jenny, because her father was the one helping represent her at the time. And the judge suggested that they read the letter from the Department of State. And the person from the California DMV issued a non-expiring counselor plate to Jenny for the vehicle.
Mm. Wow.
Jenny now lives in Montana and drives on a non-expiring counselor plate that was issued by the California DMV.
Wow.
So there's a lot of the people that I've been connecting with, that I've been going back to and back with, that had their status corrected. Now, obviously, that one was a very long time ago. But what's happening is I've been asking those that I know had their status corrected about stories relating to their status correction. Most of them, it's a, oh, ho-hum, John. Nothing's happening. Did I spend the money for no reason at all? And, you know, and it's the old story about having a PPD, a little personal protection device, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, mom and dad are asleep upstairs and they hear the tink of some glass in the dining room, and all of a sudden there's some commotion, and you know, and the kids are crying and moaning, and dad's up and he's got his personal protection device out, and there's a standoff between, you know, a nocturnal, one or more nocturnal intruders and dad. But see, dad has something there to deal with, and you know, and the guy says, and I'm going to speak to an actual event that occurred in West Covina, California, when I lived out there, where he had three children that were sleeping downstairs, and mom and dad were upstairs. And the three children that were sleeping downstairs were all visitors' children to their two. They had a slumber party, and they were all sleeping on the sofa when somebody broke in the house. And two bad guys, one collected the three children, was holding a gun to their head, and the other bad guy didn't have a gun. And the guy, you know, he says, put your gun down or I'm going to shoot your kids. He says, those aren't my kids. He says, put your gun down or I'm going to shoot this kid. That's going to be your fault. He says, whatever you do, do not take that gun off that little girl's head. And he walked over with his gun drawn and put it right into the eye and put it into his eye socket. He says, you move, you flinch, you take that gun off of her, you die instantaneously. And the other guy, the other nocturnal intruder says, you're nuts, you're insane. He says, no, I'm going to shoot him, and then I'm going to shoot you. Lay down on the floor, palms down on the ground. And the guy says, you're nuts, and he says, let the gun go, give it to the little girl, get on the ground. And he had his 1911 A in the guy's eye socket. Says, don't you dare take that gun off her, because you're dead instantaneously. And he says, if she dies, you die instantaneously also, then your friend dies. And he says, your friend moves, you die instantaneously, then I shoot your friend, you know. And but see, he had something to do business to deal with it, you know. But what happens when you wake up in the middle of the night and there's a nocturnal intruder and you have no capacity to deal with the situation? That's not good. Though you're not at war, the tip of the spear best be sharp. Though you don't need one, it's good to have one. And, you know, and every 6 months you take the time to pull that thing out, run a bore brush through and clean it, and go out and burn some powder and just stay proficient with it. And that it, the worst case scenario is that it dies of old age of rust somewhere because it never got used. That's the same thing with this type of insurance for having your status corrected. Hopefully, you will never have the dubious honor and privilege of having to use it. But while you've got the opportunity to get it, it's our hearty and most considerate and respectful encouragement that you get this corrected. There's things that I never imagined before were possible. I asked if I could get a copy of the plate for Jenny, and mom said that she's very protective about it. She doesn't tell anybody her status. She doesn't tell anybody any of that thing. She says she tried one time, she bragged about it at a dinner party about 25, 30 years ago, and next thing they know, she was down at the police station again. And they got it ironed out, but people thought that she was impersonating a diplomat. And she already had counselor plates on her car, and she has a 71 Corvette, so go figure. Did counselor plates on a 71 Corvette? Did I miss something? That alone was not a bright move. But the thing is that, so since then, it took her 2 days to get out of the PD, mom said. And, dad said that he was down there almost the whole time trying to get it worked out until they finally got with the judge, you know, and the, to go back. They had to get the judge, and they had to get the judge to issue a court order supporting the fact that she had her status, because he was not able to release the letter from the State Department. And now you know why she was in jail for a couple of days, because she got arrested on Friday night. at the dinner party. And so she spent Saturday night and Sunday night. It was Monday when the court opened that Dad tottered on down to the court, explained the situation. Judge was still the sitting judge in the bench in there in Southern California in Orange County. And they got a court order, you know, stating, giving, identifying her status, and so that they could get her out. They said since then she's not so boastful or braggadocious. She doesn't test her status. Apparently, the Corvette itself lives mostly in the garage because it's such a curio and it's so expensive to maintain that she doesn't actually drive it anymore. She apparently drives a regular minivan most of the time, but nonetheless, she has a car that has a counselor plate on it. So, now you know how she got the speeding ticket was over 30 miles an hour. And, she had a lead foot and a fast car. And, but what's happening here is that, we're slowly finding out more and more, individuals that, with their status corrected, have averted some very, very, very serious challenges. And, GW, did you want to make any comments at this time?
No, I'm just listening in and, really enjoying the, conversation and, just the stories you've been telling about Jenny and this other situation also. It's interesting. From what I'm gathering is that, even if you do the process, John, with this, they're not going to be able to receive the letter, you know, from the State Department, from what I understand, even if you kind of figured out the process. So I guess the only thing that it's really, really useful for is understanding it enough to where you get the Secretary of State's office to send the letter to whatever a scenario you need it sent to, so that it can be a major part of the remedy.
Right. What's happening right now is that we're using the students on this call and the individuals on this call to run some experiments. And in the past couple of weeks, one of our students is Jennifer from New York online, Michael.
There you go.
Head on you. No, sir.
Jennifer is not. Okay. Trat, I was hoping she would have been online too. So our 714-972 prefix has not come on either.
That is correct.
Okay. Yeah, that's her cell number. Although she lives up north, she still has a Southern California phone number.
We have many people on the call, but there's no newbies.
No newbies. Okay, thank you. There's a regular that lady was on the call last week, Jennifer. We just finished crafting helping her craft a letter that is asking for the 8 U.S.C. 1502 to be issued. And please, can you send me a courtesy copy of what you send them so I know what they received? And that's the verbiage that we've used on that, GW. I'm sorry I haven't had a chance to catch up with you on all this, but actually I was thinking that tonight, inviting you to the call tonight was the easiest way to, because of my workload, to catch up with the students and catch up with you on this. So I know you're getting blindsided on a little bit of this. I apologize about that. But
that's all right.
Hey. Yeah, well, you know, we just do what we can, the best we can, the way we can, right?
Right.
Yeah. And Jennifer, we just finished a letter to regarding a traffic matter, and one of them. And we've got multiple matters that involve the Office of Revenue Recovery in the state of New York and the tax office, et cetera, that we're working on, that we're asking to see if we can get the State Department to go ahead and issue these letters. And we're trying to figure out the latitude with which unofficially they can work. We've got the black and white. It's in front of us, you know, and the code is very, very specific to it. Such certificate, quote unquote, such certificates shall be solely for use in the case in which it was issued and shall be transmitted by the Secretary of State through the appropriate official channels to the judicial or administrative officers of the foreign state in which it is to be used. Okay? So that's the statute that they're dealing with. But what's happening is that we're looking at the latitude that they have behind the scenes. We do have some people inside the State Department that have been coaching us and helping us do some things over the years, but none of them work in the area that would deal with the Certificate of Nationality. So we're kind of in uncharted waters as far as getting the certificate, and getting a copy of the Certificate of Nationality. To date, so far in the last 4 or 6 weeks since we've started this with the students, we haven't got in the four students that have submitted one, or we've crafted one, a letter, we haven't got any responses yet. So and we're working on right now crafting one for the for Mr. T. And the thing is that I don't know how this is possible, but the one person that I was referred to, that the lady said, this guy knows everything, he's the know-all, tell-all Swami. The day before she referred me to him, he was diagnosed with CV-19 and hospitalized. And, I called her back and I said, look, did you know that he was in the hospital the day before you gave me his number to follow up? And she goes, no, I didn't. And, she goes, but he's the expert right now that I know of, and he's the one that submits this to the secretary for signature. And, at the moment, we're still trying to figure out how much fun we can really have with this one. But, with that, I'd like to request that any and all the individuals on this call, if there is any issue that you might have that needs an administrative remedy, that you could consider writing a letter to the Secretary of State, and please feel free to make an appointment with Michael, or to make an appointment with me through Michael. If you want to review your letter, view and review before you send it, there's little things that we might want to put into that to help make it a little bit more palatable, or even maybe a juicy tidbit on their side of the communication. But the big issue is that we would like to deluge them with so many of the, well, not too many, but enough of these letters that they start to the person that helps me says that, whether it was helping me, said that there's no this one gentleman knows most of the what to's and wherefores. He this is not designated as part of his job, and she says we don't actually have anybody designated to take care of the 8 U.S.C. 1502 claims, because there have been so few of them, nobody. It's not enough to keep a full, even one full-time employee on board dealing with it. You know, they come in, she said, two or three times a year is how often they've been coming in. And this gentleman, in addition to his regular assigned workload, they've been sending him to him, okay? And he's the one that sends it up the hill to the Secretary of State just for signature, you know, once he's got it ready to go. So what we would like this class to do is everyone, please, figure out something, anything. Hey, my dog's my best friend's father-in-law that went to school with this guy's brother's sister, they got married to this person from Norway whose dog got her toe stubbed, is in the pound, and I need a letter sent, you know. Whatever you come up with, please, let's try to develop a little letter writing campaign from the Tuesday night call so that we can begin to exercise this for two reasons. Number one, to get them to develop a regular person and so that these needs are getting met, and two, to better know how to take care of and protect you and get by getting the remedies that are already in the law to be applied. I'm not saying get some new direction or something that hasn't been done before. I'm saying the remedies that are in the code, that are in the law, we want to get them to start to apply them for your sake and your protection, and we need to find the path that they've got the law, they've got the statutes. Oh yes, holy broken tree feathers, Batman! Do they have them? Are they exercising or doing anything with them? No. They three of the people that I talked to last week alone before the holidays all said there is nobody that has enough time to deal with these. They have to allot time to be able to work on this. This is something that they don't have an allotment, allocation of time yet. And so part of what we want to do is get them to make an allocation. We're not only learning about the remedies that are available in the law, but we're going to try to help them come to the place where they can exercise. And sometimes when I say exercise, I think about that old movie from the 60s or the 70s with that girl, you know, and the priest, you know, and, you know, we exercise, you know, the system here. We're trying to exercise the demons out of the system so it begins to function properly, you know. But GW, is it that bad or is it much worse than I'm saying?
I think you're spot on.
At this juncture, we know the law, and we know some incidental and isolated cases where the somebody has actually come to a place where they've needed it, and it's been very, very successful. There's other cases right now that we have that they are not moving on it because the people that we talk to they just don't know what they're doing. And so what we're trying to do is that for the remedies that are already there that we know in the law, she said that for the last 7 years, it's been averaging 3 to 4 cases a year. That's it. You know, and for as many American nationals that are out there, we should be exercising the system quite a bit more than that. Has every one of those individuals got their remedy, the legal remedy? Oh yeah. Not one of them has been left behind apparently. And she wouldn't comment on the specifics of each of the individual cases, but she said every one of them got a response and got taken care of. And so, so that's a very, very good thing. And she also asked me for my information and my name and all, date of birth and all that stuff. And I don't actually have a Social Security number to use with the United States government. She went the long way around. She went my passport number, my passport card number. And she says, it's interesting. You've already had one case where your situation was covered by the fact that you're an American national. And I says, excuse me, what do you mean? He says, well, somebody apparently claimed that you hit and run them, and they filed. And I says, really? Where was this? And they said it occurred in Atlanta, Georgia. And I says, it's been 25 years since I was last in Atlanta, Georgia. And she goes, well, apparently they said you were unpursuable and that they told the Atlanta PD, and I found this out yesterday, that they told the Atlanta PD that they could not pursue, and so the matter was dropped. And I says, when was the hit and run supposed to be? Says, 5 weeks ago. You know, and it turns out I found out what was happening. We had some plates stolen off. There were some vehicles that were parked at our place before our fire 9 years ago, and we had the plates off of four vehicles stolen. And we never, you know, although we reported it, we never thought much of it. And turns out one of those plates, it turned up, and that's how it was used. But before we found out, you know, yesterday when I traced it all down through the day's efforts, when I finally found out, you know, and I called Atlanta PD, and they says, oh, I'm sorry, sir. We apologize for trying to pursue you. We know that we can't. I says, can you at least give me the plate number of the vehicle that was, and it turns out it was the license plate off of an old Toyota Corolla that we used to own that died in the fire. But the plate was stolen before the fire. I says, that plate was stolen, and I send her, and I told him under Houston police report, you know, you can double check it was it, and the plates off of three of our vehicles were reported stolen just over 10 years ago. And so we found out why. But it was interesting. They didn't even try to come get me, and I'm still not finding out all the rest of that case. I'm waiting to find out the rest of particulars before I tell my wife how bad the situation really wasn't or was, you know. But I didn't know the that some turns out there's other plates that were stolen at the same time. But I didn't even know about that, and they that became a dead issue. So hence, now all of you are starting to understand why 8 U.S.C. 1502 is such a important focus for all of us right now. And to that end, this week, please, 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 if you do not have a copy of the statute, either look it up in Google, and the first or second line is the LLI, Legal Information Institute. That's Cornell Law. Get a copy from there or ask Michael for a copy of it. And call the 800 number. Make the application to the Secretary of State. Let's start working the system and get a system that works for getting resolution on that. With that, my time has come just about to close. GW, would you like to say anything before we open up for a Q&A?
No, sir. I think you've done a great job.
Well, you're very gracious. Very gracious, my honored brother. So to that, my time has now come to a close. We're going to open it up for Q&A. If your questions can continue with the subject matter topic, we'd appreciate that, although you're not required to. Thank you once again. It's an honor and privilege to serve Lady Liberty, God, my country, and each of you by serving you. Thank you. Back to you, Martin and Michael.
All right. Thank you so much. Now is the time for questions and answers, folks. Press star 2 on your keypad if you have a question. That's for everybody that's on the call with us. Star 2 at this time to raise your hand. For everybody else listening at freedomsradio.com, type your questions in the question bar at this time and click submit.
Well,
my first question from, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Yep, Trip in Virginia, go ahead.
Hello, everyone. Thank you. When you were saying write the letter to the State Department, you mean the U.S. State Department in Washington, D.C.?
That is correct, sir.
Okay. And so the purpose is to try to get them to just basically hire people to acknowledge us? I guess, are we really expecting them to respond back?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely. So far, sometimes it's taken them quite a while to respond. Now, a year ago, last August, I was escorted through a mail room in a Department of State Passport Bureau. I was two floors down from the Passport Bureau. But I was shown letters that back then that were 18 and 19 months old at the time. And she said that there were some that were much older than that, that they were handling them in direct order that they were received in. Now, there's an 800 number for the State Department, but I'm going to give everybody on the call tonight another number for the State Department. This is the direct dial. So everybody, if you have your pens and pencils or your email application open, this area code 202. And Michael, you probably ought to write this one down too, so if anybody asks you, but it's area code 202-647. 4000. That's area code 4000. Now that's the direct dial for the Washington, D.C. State Department, okay? Now, if you want the mailing address, that particular mailing address is 2201 C Street, Northwest, and that's Washington, D.C., USA, okay? And if you'd like to address a letter to them, that's get there by just saying the Harry S. Truman Building, Northwest Washington, D.C., U.S. And some people will say, John, you didn't include a zip code on that. Yeah, I haven't. And you know what? to get to the Department of State, you don't actually need the zip code, but if you want it, it's 20520. It's 20 with a, it's two 20s with a 5 in the middle. 20520. So, it's 2201 C Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C. And if you want the zip code, 2520520. But that other number that I gave you is one that an internal State Department individual gave me, the 202-647-4000, when I was dialing the 800 number. Does that help answer your question, brother?
It does. Thank you very much. Michael, my intention is to get a letter to you tomorrow so you can see it.
Thank you. And I'll say no. Thank you, my honored brother. Take care.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Okay. Back to you, Martin and Michael. Sirs.
All right. Next up, we've got here. We've got William in Tennessee. Go ahead.
Okay, I got a quick question for you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, William. Yes. Thank you. Can hear you very well.
Okay, didn't know if I was muted. The multiple letters that you said had been sent by different people that had gotten results, or the person in D.C. with whom you spoke, John, who said that they had answered lots of letters satisfactorily to the people who had written them. That's at this address, this 2201 C Street,
C
Northwest.
That C is just the letter. And if you know anything about D.C., you know the A, B, C, D, E streets, you know, et cetera,
sure.
Et cetera, et cetera. But that's 2201 C Street, Washington, D.C., 20520.
You got that. Now, is that a live person or a bot at that 202-647-4000?
No, this is the real building. This is the Department of State. This is they have their own mailroom in the State Department.
I'm talking about the phone number, the 202-647-4000.
Okay.
Is that,
oh,
you,
no,
get
that's
a live person,
that's
here,
okay,
or do you get a,
okay,
or do you get a phone tree, with 50 different selections on it?
No, it starts out with a phone tree, and there's an automated assistant, and I've been pressing 0 3 times and getting a live person.
Okay.
Now,
after 4,000,
you know, 0, 0, 0. Well, when, you know, I always wait 3 to 5 seconds before I press it the second time, and then 3 to 5
yeah.
seconds to press it the third time.
Okay.
Now, last Wednesday, I didn't get a, it could have been because they were getting ready for the Thanksgiving holidays, but I didn't actually get to, now when you do that, you get to a hold, and they say, recently they changed their hold. It used to be they told you which caller number you were, and your caller number 3,744 or your caller number 2, they used to say that. Now they've got a new recording on that. But when you go through those 3 prompts. But right now, I've made mistakes when dialing in, and I somehow got to somebody else that I didn't expect that was helpful. So right now, I'm not in a big hurry to correct everybody's, just to say, do the same thing that I did, et cetera. What I'm finding out is that a lot of these individuals are figuring out stuff, by stumbling around that I did not have a clue before. And to that end, I'm hoping, not to be rude or unkind, but I'm hoping to let some of you stumble around a little bit and find out what else we can find. Does that sound strange or bad?
Well, so do you have any set procedure for actually confirming that our status has been corrected, other than us just going in and stumbling around and trying to find somebody that might direct us? Is there?
If right now, right now, if I did, it would be because there was somebody that was confidentially assisting me inside, and she's somebody that I've known for over 30 years. When I first met her, she was a supervisor at the Dallas-Fort Worth State Department office, and I used to help individuals get passports without Social Security numbers, and I met her back then. And if I did, she may be quietly confirming or denying some of these things to me, but this is not her bailiwick. She does not normally do this. This is not her job. And she's indicated that she doesn't want any attention. But the answer is very much a firm yes, and at the same time a resounding no, because I can't actually use it to do official work. Does that make sense?
Well, is there any? It doesn't sound at all reassuring. Is there any way to get this confirmed through a sheriff's department? Because the sheriff's department that I've been to have run my passport card and said nothing's come up. They haven't been able to determine any status. So if I were to get stopped, and submit my instead of a driver's license, submit my passport card, and they run it, and they don't come up with anything, and then they want to get nasty, I'm concerned about the validity of getting my status corrected if there's no way to verify it.
Now, you say you've been stopped and they checked it?
I have been stopped, and they checked it, and they didn't want to take it, and so I took it to a sheriff's department and asked them politely just to run it. I said, I've corrected my status. Would you mind just running this for me and see what you come up with? And there was a lady who was really nice, and she said, yeah. So she took it and came back 10, 15 minutes later. She said, you know, I can't come up with anything. I can't get into their system with this.
Okay, I got stopped. I got stopped Friday morning in Greenwood, Arkansas, and I said, here's my identification, here's my insurance, and I says, well, give me your driver's. I says, I'm digging for that right now. He says, well, I'll take this for the moment. And he went back to his patrol vehicle. He come back to me 7 minutes later. Nobody takes that long to just run a driver's license or a passport card. He come back to me. He says, I apologize, sir, for disturbing you. Please accept the apologies of the Greenwood Police Department for disturbing you. We didn't know who you were. By the way, can you get that door latch fixed? It keeps coming loose. It appears to be coming loose. And that was it. And that was Friday morning in Greenwood, Arkansas. And I was turning a corner, and the right front passenger door of the van that I was driving swung open. And what happened was that after I got going straight again, I veered and corrected to the opposite direction to get enough inertia to slam the door. But that person did not see. He says, by the way, do you have a state driver's license? I says, no. Then I found my IMQ, and I showed him the IMQ. He says, and this was all after he apologized. And he says, well, you know, have you considered getting a U.S. state driver's license? I says, the last time I had one was 1994. I actually haven't. He goes, I asked, do I need one? He says, well, sir, to be matter of fact, you don't. This was last Friday morning.
That was last Friday?
This was last Friday morning. I was in Greenwood, Arkansas, and I had just dropped my son off at the place we were visiting, and I drove the family van into town to go to the hardware store, and passing the corner that the police station is on, the police station overlooks this corner. While I was making a left turn, the door swung open. Yeah, and I got stopped, you know, and he, after 7 minutes of being gone, I watched it on my phone. He finally says, I'm sorry, sir. I apologize for disturbing. Please accept our apologies on behalf of the Greenwood Police Department. And he asked again about the door, and I says, yeah, I was surprised when the door swung open also. I just dropped off my son. I don't know if it wasn't closed all the way or what. But he says, you know why I stopped you, right? He says, you know, you veered. And I says, well, you know, I was veering to close the door. He says, yeah, I figured that out too. But I was trying to determine if you were intoxicated or something, you know. He says, but you're the most kindly, respectful person that I don't know if there's a person in Greenwood that's as, and in my hometown here that's as kindly and respectful as you are. He says, but he says, please accept our humble apology. And I says, does that mean you're not writing me a ticket? He goes, do I need to? I says, well, I'm honored and pleased to accept whatever ticket you would write, and I'll be happy to discuss it with the judge. And he goes, you know, I bet you would, but, you know, he says, even if I wrote you for no state driver's license, he says, you don't need a driver's license, so I know you'd get it dismissed right away. He volunteered that. I have a spiel that I normally give when somebody asks about, you know, why don't you have a state driver's license, you know, and I asked him, well, that's a good question. Did you really want an answer? You know, and when they, of course I do. Well, good question. I'm glad you asked. I let him buy into it. I says, could we do a little role play for a moment? And I do a role play with them where they're the judge and I'm the defendant appearing before them. And by the time they get done, usually they agree that I don't need a state driver's license. This gentleman, the only thing he saw was my passport card, and that's what he took to his vehicle with my insurance paperwork. So go ahead.
You mentioned, I think, a UMC or something like that.
Pardon?
You mentioned the three-letter code, like a UMC or something like that.
An IMQ.
IMQ. What is that?
Yeah. An international motorist qualification. It's something that has its origin in a February 12, 1954 treaty. Well, actually, it's a treaty that was recognized by The Hague in 1954, February 12th ruling, that there's 138 signatories to countries that are signatory to the treaty. That if a gentleman does, or somebody does, the equivalent of an apostille, that they verify that you are capable of handling a motorcycle or a car, motor vehicle, and they testify that, then you can use that because a license is permission to do something that's otherwise illegal, and you can't deprive somebody of their right to drive to work or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you know, to drive to church on Sunday or work on Monday or go shopping on Wednesday. Or if your child cuts his foot on a glass bottle on Tuesday night, you can't deprive him of that right. So the license, and while most countries now have licenses and they're drastically trying to go through that. In fact, I tried to, right now, I'm trying to get help somebody else get theirs renewed, and the offices that in the British West Indies where I got my IMQ from is in the process of moving. But that's what I've driven on for 19 years now, since, 29 years now I've driven on that. And every traffic ticket that I've got has gotten dismissed on it anyway. But I don't pull that. That's not my quick draw. The thing that I do is that asking the question about, well, you know, asking when they ask, why don't you have a state driver's license? Well, that's a good question. That's, I'm glad you asked. And out of the probably 2 or 3 dozen times I've been stopped in the last 10, 15, or 20 years, I've only pulled the IMQ 3 times. And twice it was after they said they weren't going to give me a ticket. You know, so, because of the problematic issues of obtaining it, how long it takes to obtain, and the fact that, you know, and that every judge I've gone before, with the exception of 2 of them, when I've, you know, had an IMQ in the last almost 30 years, they, I have to explain to them, they have to look up the treaty, I have got to go with everything. But when I ask the question about, a license, you know, is a license or permission to do something that's otherwise illegal, you know, and I ask them the constitutional question, that always goes through without them having to get their legal people, their court clerk to do his or her research for them and find the right website and stand there with the threat of them now finding it guilty of not having a driver's license. I found that asking the question about the constitutional issue is always the better way to go.
Let me ask you, if you provide proof of insurance, you're giving
proof of financial response. Hold it. Proof of financial responsibility is what the law says. You don't have to have insurance. You just have to have proof of financial responsibility. And the last 3 states that said that it had to be insurance have now all had their laws revised, because that is they're favoring the insurance industry rather than individuals that can even be self-insured. And that was two state legislators, one from Pennsylvania and one from Idaho, are both still serving sentences for, shall we say, the laws that they had in their states that required insurance, because of the lobbyist for the insurance company that they caved to. So it's financial responsibility.
And what do they look for proof of financial? What do they accept for proof of financial responsibility?
Well, I know a lot of people that they find it's a lot less expensive to drive with a bond, and that they go one person goes to Lloyd's of London. It costs him $450 a year, and he has a $2 million bond against injury or property damage. It doesn't fix his car. It's not like uninsured motorist that'll fix your car, but it's a bond that covers the liability of, you know, if you get a flat tire and accidentally drive through a storefront window and do a bunch of damage or injure somebody. You know, it's a, so they'll accept PR bonds. If you have money on account at a particular financial institution that most of them, if it's in excess of $1 million cash, they will accept verification of funds with a hold established on it as proof of financial responsibility. Those are just a couple of the examples.
Not many of us driving around have $1 million in a bank somewhere.
Most of us don't. But a $400, $600, or $800 bond with Amoco or Lloyd's or Barclays or, you know, any one of those other folks, that'll also work.
Okay, I'm making a note of that. Okay.
Lloyd's is a good place to shop for that bond.
Lloyd's of London?
Yep.
Okay. So really the 8 USC 1502 would not be applicable to anybody that wants to have something on file for themselves. I mean, because they would not be able to carry that with them.
You're mostly correct, and here's why I'm going to qualify that as mostly correct. There is one person that I know of that she says she has a copy of the letter that was sent for her son, and that I haven't been able to get a hold of her or her son for the last 3 or 4 years, but she said she had a copy of that and used to carry that. And I'm not exactly certain of all of the details of that, but the statute is very, very crystal clear. You know, we've read the statute once or twice already, but it says that such certificates shall be solely for use in the case in which it was issued and shall be transmitted by the Secretary of State through the appropriate official channels to the judicial administrative officers of foreign state in which it's to be used. And it was explained to me that the reason it has to go through official channels is so that they reduce, and the gentleman that was explaining this to me says, reduce the threat of forgery. So it has to go direct from the Secretary of State's office and be traceable. Yeah, you want to jump in on this one, GW?
Well, I can understand why they would want to do that. You can understand it from their point of view that the forgeries would be just viral. On that kind of an instrument. I mean, the forgeries would just be viral. They come up with all
well,
kinds
if you,
of, you know, great things.
If you're on file, though, if you've got if you've corrected your status and you're actually on file in their State Department records, why would they not send you a written verification of that through the 8 USC 1502 application process? Because they've got in their records you are an American national.
Okay, so that part's true, but the other part where you just read it, and it's very easy to understand that it has to go through official channels to the court or the administrator. So that's why they're not going to send it to you. I mean, that's pretty clear.
Okay, so there's no point in us really bothering with the 8 USC 1502 process then.
Well, I don't look at the glass being, you know, half empty. I look at it as it's being half full right now. Okay.
Yeah, well, that's only usable then if you're going overseas, right? If you're staying here in the country, it's not usable, is it?
Are you asking me or telling me?
Well, I'm asking you. It's a question. Because
Michael,
it says for a foreign, for you know, you mentioned you read it there for the foreign state in which it's to be used.
Right.
And they don't consider, you know, any of the U.S. states foreign states.
Yes,
Michael,
yeah.
would you honor us by reading that little note from the Enablement Act for Alaska coming into the Union again?
Might be on calls.
No, Michael's there. He's just... He's first he's looking for us
right
now. He's also on mute.
All right. So you want the Alaskan thing?
Yep.
Jurisdiction?
Yep.
All right. One moment.
About regarding foreign state.
Yep. Almost there.
But these are all great questions. I'm glad you're asking them. It just so happens that some of these questions were just asked 2 or 3 weeks ago and 5 or 6 weeks ago, respectfully. And so this is the third time in the last 6 or 7 weeks that Michael's rereading some of this. I'd love to get Michael to read it because he has a great take on it.
All right. When a state court in Alaska needed a federal judge to handle a case overload, the Congress amended United States Code Title 28, Section 297B, Bravo, to make that possible. In its reference to the 50 states, the statute is titled 2013 U.S. Code Title 28, Judiciary and Judicial Procedure, Part 1, Organization of Courts, Sections 1 through 482, Chapter 13, Assignment of Judges to Other Courts, Sections 291 through 297, at particular, Section 297, Assignment of Judges to Courts of the Freely Associated Compact States. Then the Congress refers to these freely associated compact states as countries. Reference B, as in Bravo, quote, the Congress consents to the exemption, acceptance, and retention by any judge so authorized of reimbursement from the countries referred to in subsection A, end quote.
Well, there you go.
and that was when? How long ago was that?
1959, if I remember.
That was about 64 years ago. So it's actually fairly recent.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's 2013 U.S. 28 Judiciary and Judicial Procedure. And then you said look in sections 291 through 297.
Bill, anybody on the call, go to www.oncewewerecolonists.com.
Okay. Okay.
The whole thing is written out in there.
Okay. Very good.
Yeah. So if you take and string the lines together of thought here, you string the lines of what they're saying, they first categorize it as one of the, Union States Compact. I forget the way you said it, Michael, but, they're referring to the several states, all the states in the union, 50 states, and then they call them countries. And then now you notice that when in Title 8 at 1502, where it talks about how the Secretary of State, through official channels can, certify somebody as an American national and then to that foreign state. So
sure.
What's interesting is that Arizona would be a foreign state to the District of Columbia right there and the Secretary of State. Any state out there is going to be a foreign state. So, I mean, they're precise in their language, but at the same time, it's couched in such a way that makes the average person just go, well, that's Germany. That'd be Mexico. They want you to have that knee-jerk reaction, and the reality is that Mexico and Germany, they all are foreign states, but so is Arizona, so is California.
Okay, very well.
Exactly.
That'll be real helpful.
Well, a little while back, this has been a couple of years ago, we had an Oregon resident that was traveling from California through Nevada, stopped at a little store just on the California side of the California-Nevada line, picked up some gummy, some
they were the CBD. It was CBD gummy.
Yeah, the CBD gummies. And the next thing we know, we have a Nevada constabulary stopping him and arresting him and detaining him and charging him. And he ended up getting multiple felony grand jury indictments against this individual. Finally, he got bonded out, finally got out, and the case he was scheduled for arraignment, and we helped him craft a very, very nice letter, of which we attached his affidavit of status and his nationality, and we did a quick 1 day turn time at the local, or we had him go to the State Department that had the Passport Bureau co-located with us, so there was live individuals there, and we've been told that when a person demands a same day passport, that is the only time that they're required to update their records on their status in the computer immediately. And this is what happened to him. And the next, we sent out, about a week or two later, we sent out this letter to the a motion to the judge and served the prosecutor. And the next, it's still going to be like 2 weeks or, what was it, Michael, 2.5 weeks away before his arraignment was scheduled to occur. He gets this check in the mail that is for the amount of his bail. Nobody sends a check with a whole number to the left of the decimal place with that many zeros between the decimal place and the whole number out for no reason at all. To this day, they would not entertain the et cetera position. We got a very, very short letter saying, in the interest of justice, we apologize for what's happening. Here's returning your bail to you. The case has been dismissed. And we sent that letter and a copy of his affidavit, notarized copy of that. And apparently they looked into it, and they were not, they decided that the multiple felony grand jury indictments they had, they were going to crumple them up and put them in the round file. And they did. So there's another thought for you about correcting an individual's status. Can I speak specifically to that was the, whether it was the letter that he sent or that we helped him or is a status? To this day, I still suspect that it was mostly the status, although I'd like to personally believe, my ego would like to believe that we did a good job on the letter, but it's my humble suspicion that status was the issue why they dismissed.
Comment?
Is that it? Well, okay, Michael, go ahead.
And there's two court cases that I want to address and bring to light for this conversation and for any other future conversations with regards to correcting your political citizenship status. The first is U.S. versus Valentine, 28 F. Sup. 957. Quote, the only absolute and unqualified right, that's a singular right, the only. It's not your Bill of Rights. This is something else. The only absolute and unqualified right of a United States citizen is to something called residence within the territorial boundaries of the United States.
United States.
End quote.
That's it. I remember the first time reading that. I really do. I was like, what's up?
Yeah, really. Number two, Hendricks versus Maryland. SC Reporters, round 610 through 625. This is a 1914 decision. Quote, a U.S. citizen, upon leaving the District of Columbia, becomes involved in interstate commerce as a resident does not have the common law right to travel of a citizen of one of the several states, end quote. Now, you can sit there and pull out right to travel and just leave it as right. In other words, to say a U.S. citizen upon leaving the District of Columbia becomes involved in interstate commerce as a resident does not have the common law rights of a citizen of one of the several states, end quote. You could say that as well. Same thing. That's talking
now
about the Bill of Rights.
Both those are cited in Once We Were Colonists, aren't they?
Yes. I'm sharing with you all, and I hammer this every week and more often than that on other calls that I do, is that you should have printed off Once We Were Colonists, bound it, and put it in your library and where your throne is, your throne room, you know, where you shower, and leave it there and read it and reread it to the point where you can almost start reading something, put it down, and continue speaking it as though you're reading it. Now, the other thing, too, is that in Black's Law, it has three definitions of the United States. The first definition applies to me because I've traced my genealogy back to having a grandfather, 8 times removed, boots on the ground, registered with the Massachusetts militia, whose name was Nathaniel, and I can say, I am Michael Edward, the name of a sovereign, occupying the position analogous to other sovereigns in the family of nations. Well, that's definition number one in Black's Law of United States, applying to citizenship. I can say, I am Michael Edward, a Floridian, domiciled in Florida, one of the several states in perpetual union, as expressed under a Constitution for the United States of America, circa 1789, and amended 1791. I can say that. And I can also say, that's the third definition, by the way, I can also say that I am Michael Edward, and I am not a United States citizen subject to the United States. Because that's the second definition. Your remedy is in the law. Back to you, John.
Thank you, Michael. I love it when he does that. Okay, so have we kind of answered your question?
Yeah, you answered mine.
Wonderful. Okay. With that, back to you, Martin and Michael, sir. Sirs, plural.
All right, next up we've got Bruce in Texas. Go ahead, Bruce.
You had mentioned, or I think it was GW had mentioned, having some license plates stolen years ago.
That was John. Yep.
That was John.
Okay,
that was John.
I apologize. So when that happened and you called in to the local constabularies, and they said, oh, we're sorry, but we were not supposed to even try to contact you. I'm assuming that because of your status that they saw that you had basically diplomat rights to not be questioned or detained or whatever. Were you ever able to find out what they saw that gave them that response?
Let me put my two cents in here before John
speaks. Go ahead, GW.
You know, what is amazing about this is that John just shared is not only that John has had a status change for quite a long time, been decades and decades, but also that John had no idea, like he told us, and somebody from inside saw something going on and put forth the paperwork, didn't they, John? Wouldn't you read
it
that
was
way?
Completely unsolicited, didn't even know there was a problem, didn't have a clue, and somebody unsolicitedly And had I not known her for over 30 years and had some kind of personal relationship, if I had something like that, I probably couldn't tell you because it was confidential, and if I didn't, I couldn't tell you because it didn't exist anyway. So I'm not
right.
Me. I'm some other guy. I'm from the Bronx. But had I not had those strange dots connected, I would have never known.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
Great. Thanks. That was my question. But apparently it works for whoever. I mean, I know there's been a few comments from people that they get nothing when they run the card, so to speak. But that could be, who knows, some less than modern system that town or city is using. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. And when I got stopped in Greenwood, Arkansas on Friday, I was just going over to the hardware store from a family's house that was less than 4 miles away. And I had no idea. And this hick town boasts a huge, sprawling, whopping population of 9,034 people. You know, so you've got to wonder how well connected some of these itty bitty little townships might be. You know,
when
one that's got less than 10,000 people, and all I gave him was my insurance. And when I gave my insurance and my passport card, I says, I'm going to keep, is it okay? Do I have your permission to keep looking for what I drive on? And I didn't say driver's license. I said, what I drive on. You know?
Okay.
And when he came back, you know, over 7 minutes later, you know, and I saw the time on my cell phone.
Right.
It seemed like an eternity there.
And you know, he called somebody and says, what? Now what?
Oh,
what is it saying?
Oh,
what?
You gotta be certain he not only looked in the computer, but he called somebody, you know,
yeah.
And it was in the high 30s outside. And so, he was inside his car, so I couldn't see him. You know, he was staying in where it was nice and cozy and warm, but I couldn't see what he was doing in the tinted windshields. You know how they go, I didn't, you know, it was amazing. I did tell him about my INQ, but that was after he gave me my passport card and my insurance back. And because we left famous friends, you know, and we shook hands when we got done, and we were laughing when we shook hands and chuckling, and you know, it was great. It was an unbelievable personal interaction with a small town Leo.
Well,
you know, constabulary.
He knew you weren't a federal refugee of some sort, and he knew that you were a good guy of some sort. He didn't know exactly what, but he knew you were not somebody to worry about.
Well, and there is something that that's a good point you make, and I'll add this one little point. I try to act verifiably non-belligerent. By the time he got to, you know, when I saw the lights come on, I rolled down the windows on both sides of the vehicle, and it was cold in there. I shut the engine off. I put the keys on the dash up in the glass where he could see him walking up, and I had my wallet out and open on the dash, you know, and I had my hands at 10 and 2, you know, and, you know, so that, you know, he verifiably non-belligerent, treat him with dignity and respect. How you doing today, officer? How may I be an asset or a blessing for you? And he looked at me, he says, be an asset or a blessing for me? You know, and it was like, you know, he almost started to chuckle on that one. You know, it's almost we almost broke the ice on that one, but no pun intended with the fact that it was 36 degrees out.
They don't hear that. So
yeah,
usually people are pissed off; they've been pulled over.
Yeah. So you know, acting non-belligerent, and applying that with your words to be verifiably non-belligerent,
yep,
and your actions, that's a great way to start. But, you know, some of these people, what are you stopping me for? Shouldn't you be out checking some criminal? You know, oh, buddy,
right,
did you just step in a cow pie or what? Holy
yeah,
kitty litter,
yeah,
Batman.
Yeah, exactly. Now,
yeah,
now he's on high alert.
Yeah, right.
And now he's going to look for something. Oh, that taillight looks like there's a problem. Crunch, you know.
Crunch, yeah, right. My brake light was damaged. It's at the top of the back of the van, and
mm-hmm,
it's my added, it's the secondary brake light. It
mm-hmm
was damaged. He, you know, and he did mention that, and I told him I'd get it looked
right
at the first convenience. He says, and he was very helpful. He says, you know, if you don't have the pieces for that lens anymore, he says, get a red marks a lot and paint the bulb red. Or, he says, some auto parts store even have red bulbs. He says, you know, and there's an auto parts store half a block back, and it's probably only like a $2 bulb. He says, I bet they have red there. You know, and
right,
he was offering, instead of citing me, he was offering.
Yeah.
You know, it was
yeah
very helpful. So, and
right,
that was
cool,
just, what, 3, 4, 5 days ago that happened.
Yeah.
So,
that's,
you
awesome
know, yeah. Well, the Father's blessings be upon you. Thank you for your question.
Absolutely. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Back to you, Martin and Michael.
All right. Well, that clears the queue, I believe. So *2 on your keypad, folks, if there's any final questions, or type it in on the Freedoms Radio side. We're winding down here, so any last questions?
Well, then, while we're winding down, I will once again thank all of you for the honor and the privilege of serving you and Lady Liberty, serving beside you and with you. It's an honor and a privilege to do these calls and take your interaction. And please, if I could beg all of you, if you just want to try but don't have a basis for actually making an 8 U.S.C. 1502 inquiry, call Michael Edwards, make an appointment with me, and let's see what your life is like and your family's life is like. Maybe you have an opportunity. Let's exercise the State Department, because he was very clear that if we had more of these type of interactions, there would definitely be people assigned to do this on a regular basis. And right now, the one guy that has clues is out with CV-19, and he's in the hospital, you know. So, yeah, so with that, Martin, did anybody else come up on the queue?
No, you're all set.
Okay. With that, I bid the Most High King's blessings be upon you all, upon you, your lives, your spouses, and your children. And may his peace, protection, provision, and providence go with you. And I'll turn you back to Michael for the final announcements for tomorrow night.
All right. Thank you so much. All right, folks, join us again tomorrow night, same time, same place. We have our normal Wednesday night call discussing various matters, I believe, LLCs. Mr. Edwards, do we have anything special for tomorrow night, or is it just a...
Well, it's always special. You never know who's going to drop in. Look, we had GW drop in tonight. My heart be still. I'm
yeah
grateful and thankful, GW, that you shared with us tonight. No, tomorrow night, Mr. Slavin will be returning, sharing with us about the uniqueness of his limited liability company that has no tax footprint. Now, there is something that is coming up, and John, while you're here, I want to share this with you. I sent you, oh gosh, it's been a couple of weeks now, or maybe less, inside of a couple of weeks, I sent you an email that I also shared with Mr. Slavin
regarding how the law that changes, if it becomes effective January 1st, 2024, is going to require reporting. And however, trusts are exempt from that, charitable religious trust I'm thinking of. And we've always used Mr. Slevin's Limited Liability LLC as a segue into Justice Beshear's Golden Horseshoe. So I hope that sometime you have a chance to just look at that, give it a brief view. I can resend it if you want. And we need to have conversation with Mr. Slevin and Justice Beshear on that so we may navigate for that in the future, if that's all right with you.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Michael. And to all of you, the Father's blessing be upon you. Good evening.
Good evening.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.